Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, everyone. It's Brian. And during my busy summer travels, I'm not able to catch up with all of the people I want to interview, so I'm rebroadcasting some of the episodes that didn't get very many listens. And today we are going to hear from Sean Steiner from ConeTech. Enjoy, and I'll be back live as soon as possible. Thank you. Hey everyone, it's Brian, and this is Behind the Scenes with Brian, and I am here today with my longtime friend, Sean Steiner. Hey Sean, how are you?
I'm good, Brian, thank you.
Yeah, good, good. Then I think we're both having some pretty wintry weather, me in Denver and you in Salt Lake City.
It's one of those days, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So good foot of snow this morning.
Yes, yesterday in Denver, it was beautiful, sunny, and 75 degrees, and today it's the middle of winter.
Yesterday I was on the grill doing steaks for the Super Bowl outside, and today, not so much.
Yeah. I was at my cabin chopping wood in my shirt sleeves, and it was even nice up in the mountains yesterday.
So
Sean, why don't you give us a little bit about your background?
Well, I've been at this for a little while. I've been with ConeTech now for 22 years, almost to the day. Give it another couple of weeks, and it'll be to the day. But I come at it from an engineer's perspective. My education is in civil engineering with an emphasis in geotechnical engineering. I've got both bachelor's and master's degrees from Utah State University back in the 90s. And then here recently, in the last few years, I just finished up an MBA program with the University of Utah. And that was very rewarding and a great experience. It helps bring some of that business perspective that you don't get in a traditional engineering education.
Yeah, for sure. Good for you. So, good for you.
So that was, it was very, very rewarding. And loved every, well, in hindsight, I can say I loved every minute of it. But it really was a great experience and met many, many great people, and you know, outside of our traditional norm that we typically deal with, in an engineering perspective and a business perspective that we, you know, usually find ourselves in. So, but it's been great. And like I said, I've been with ConeTech for 22 years. Started out as an operator running a CPT rig. That's what I was originally hired for. And I've worked my way up until now. I have the title of Western U.S. Manager, and have the responsibility for our three Western U.S. offices, the one here in Salt Lake, an office in Northern California, our San Leandro office, and then our fairly recently opened Seattle office that we opened up about a year and a half ago.
Oh, okay. What type of projects does ConeTech use? What is the bread and butter for ConeTech?
Well, it depends on the office. We are very regional in what we do in every one of our offices. We've now expanded to 20 offices worldwide. Probably the largest emphasis of what we do is in the mining industry. We do a lot of work in the oil sands in northern Alberta. That's probably one of our biggest sectors. Our office here in Salt Lake that I've been traditionally associated with my entire time is heavy in the mining industry. But we do a lot of traditional infrastructure, commercial development, and that sort of stuff. I mean, everything we do is site investigation with an emphasis in CPT testing. But we also do, more traditional drilling. We do geophysics. The whole thing is, site investigation. East Coast offices, there's very little mining on the East Coast, so they don't do much mining industry. They're much more commercial development and infrastructure. Overseas offices, they are mining, a lot of them. But, wherever we can, work and where we can, you know, be productive and provide a value. That's where we try and, you know, put ourselves in place for working at.
Yeah, yeah. What do you know? Do you recall offhand what year Contech was established?
1985. Started with David Weller in 1985 in Vancouver, British Columbia, and doing various things. I give David credit for having a lot of forethought and understanding of the business. He also came from an engineering background. He was working in consulting as a young engineer. Decided to go back and get a master's degree at the University of British Columbia. And during one of those master's classes, he took a class from Peter Robertson and Dick Campanella, and part of that, what they called their in situ group at UBC back then. And David was like, wow, you know how many times I could have used this technology? Not, you know, they emphasized on CPT testing, but lots of other things too. You know, dilatometers and pressure meters and, you know, everything else. And, you know, he thought to himself, you know, if I could have used this, somebody else surely could have used this. And so he started talking with Dr. Campanella and Dr. Robertson and saying, hey, you know, who does this? At the time, no one really did it in North America. It was primarily a European technology.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they said, well, you know, there's not really anybody in North America. So he started kind of thinking, and then he, you know, went back to them and said, hey, you know, can you buy this equipment? And they're like, well, yeah, you have to get it out of Europe, though.
Mm.
And so at that time, it was Hogan Togler was really the only retailer for CPT equipment. And eventually he, you know, got a catalog and bought some gear, borrowed some money. Got some investors and bought equipment and started pushing cones off the back of drill rigs. Shortly after that, I started building dedicated CPT rigs. And, you know, from one man in 1985 to over 300 people now in 2020. And, you know, it's been I've been fortunate enough to be here since 1998. It's been a great ride. When I first started, I think there were 20 some odd people in the company. So, I've been very blessed and fortunate to see the growth that's gone on over my tenure.
Yeah, that's great. You mentioned Peter Robertson, so I studied under him at the University of Alberta. Just like you, I was a non-traditional student when I went and got my master's degree. And it was also an incredibly rewarding experience to me, although when I was going through the program, it was also exhausting. Had a lot of sleep deprivation from all the school activities.
Sure.
It's kind of one of those things you're just really happy that you survived, but it's also one of the highlights of your entire career, right?
Sure. Yeah. You bet. And then, you know, and you make those lasting relationships, you know, and friendships.
Yes,
that are great, and you know, those are the things that make it the most rewarding, probably.
So, in your MBA program, can you name one class that you found to be your favorite or the most helpful?
Probably my favorite was the finance class. I thoroughly enjoyed that. We had a great professor. I think that can be said for any of my, you know. Even way back to elementary school, you know, your favorite classes are the ones you have your favorite teachers, people that are engaged, people who care about you. It makes all the difference in the world. And coming from a family of educators, you know, my mother, my grandfather, aunts and uncles, many educators in my family, extended family, you know, education was very important, and the value of having a good instructor was you know, it's just, it's innumerable. Makes a total difference in a person's life.
Mm. Yes. And I can say all those things of Peter Robertson. His style of teaching was very effective and impactful. And I just really enjoyed taking classes from him. And also from Nordic Morgenstern. He was an incredible teacher.
Yeah, one of the masters on the business.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, one of the giants. Two of the giants. Well, Sean, what You mentioned cone testing, and that's got to be kind of central in everything that you offer. Is there anything new coming up on that type of technology?
Well, there's lots of things, I guess, as a technology in general for CPT testing, there's not a lot that I'm aware of. They are trying to go through a big revision as far as ASTM goes right now and get some revisions and going through that. We have a couple people within ConeTec that are involved in that ASTM committee that is coming up for renewal again, and so there's trying to be some clarification and some different things that are going on with that. I mean, the technology itself has changed over the years, anything from the old subtraction cones or even the old mechanical cones. As far as changes go, most of the changes that are happening with how cones are built, the level of accuracy that are in there, the different tools that you can add onto the cones. I mean, CPT testing still has the fundamental readings of tip sleeve and pore pressure. That will always be there. It's the other stuff that you can have that you can add on top of that can be, beneficial. And we're always looking at coming up with different tools and techniques and evaluating and seeing what we can do to come up with different things. Technology changes. There are things that we've always experimented with, that are always tried. It keeps masters and PhD students busy in various universities across the world. But and some of them pan out and work, and some of them don't. And I guess if you don't try, you'll never know. But it's like I said, the fundamentals are always there. It's always trying to get more reliable. They're always trying to push deeper, trying to do different things. Come up with different tools and techniques that'll work with them. So that's CPT testing a little bit. It's and the nice thing about CPT testing is that it's acceptance in the engineering community. In my tenure, before coming to ConeTec, I worked 5 years in a consulting firm as a geotechnical engineer. And sadly, I didn't even know what CPT testing was at that point. I worked in Wyoming. The geology is such in Wyoming that, unless you're in the mining industry, you really don't know anything about CPT testing. You're not, going to be able to push a lot of cones in most places in that geology. And so it just wasn't there. And, you look at the different things that are out there today, everyone loves to have drill and sample and do SBT sampling. And SBT sampling is very commonplace. It's uniform, but it's also a test that is, in my mind, is misused a lot. It's sometimes become a little too commonplace. And it's a test essentially that hasn't changed since, like, I think the 1930s. It's still fundamentally the same test that it's always been.
The only thing that's really different is the energy measurement.
And you can do that, but very few people actually do energy measurements, is the hard part. So
True, very true.
and so they make assumptions and do different things. And one of the things, because we do energy calibrations for hammers, and one of the things I didn't appreciate until we actually started doing more is the energy is not uniform and unique to a particular hammer. It's not just that hammer's not always 80% or whatever the magic number is. It varies, but from site to site, it varies from depth. That could vary from borehole. It's different in clays than it is in sands and what it is in gravels. And so, it's you have to use it as it was intended, and not you to you know have to be careful with it. See its value and also see its limitations.
That's right. And just in layman's terms, it would be like if I was trying to drive a spike into the ground as compared to driving a spike into a tree trunk. The transfer of energy is just vastly different.
Sure.
And
Yeah, there is
that's the
that.
same thing you were talking about with the different materials, that the energy gets transferred differently, and so the calibration isn't the same for just hammer X.
And that's where I see it misused most of the time. And like I said, and there's a don't want to tell you a fudge factor or whatever you want to put in that stuff, but it, you know, use it how it's intended. Don't misuse it. You know, I can think back to some of the jobs I did as a young engineer, fresh out of university. You know, you Peck Hansen and Thornburn have a graph or a chart, and that, you know, classic slow mechanics textbook, and people take that graph and chart and treat it like, you know, the gospel. And this is exactly what it is, and I can make designs exactly off of these numbers. Oh, and that was never the intention. And,
right.
You know,
right.
So.
Well, Sean, is there any memorable project where it felt to you like Kontech really came to the rescue of their client?
Well, there's lots of great projects where we've done that over the years. I think my very first one was on my very first day with Kontech. It was quite an eye opener. I remember walking in on my first day of the job, and I walked in, and coming from a consulting background, I came in a pair of slacks and a button-up shirt, and I walked in the door, and, you know, the manager at that time looked at me and says, "I hope you brought work clothes." So I said, "Yeah, they're out in the car." He says, "Well, go change, because you're going out to Kennecott." And Kennecott at that time had a situation that where they were dealing with an emergency situation at that time, and so it was all hands on deck. So I went out there and pushed my first hole, got exposure to different things. I'd never really been around the mining industry at that point. There were so many different things going on. We were, you know, at that point we were running three different rigs, I think, you know, at least close to 24 hours a day, trying to get the information needed to deal with the situation at the mine at that time. And, you know, it was great. And, you know, I spent, I think, the next 3 months, we, you know, abated the emergency and did a whole bunch of follow-up work at that time, and learned a lot of different things, and it was great. And you know, that can be said for lots of different projects. We've done that for different clients where there's been emergencies people have been involved in. And you know, I think some of the most rewarding stuff is the relationships that we have with our clients, both from the consulting industry and also from the mining industry. The amount of trust and faith they put in us, and the effort that we try and put in to maintain that trust and that faith, and working hard, hiring good people, you know, trying to create a company culture that keeps people coming back and looking to Kontech as being, you know, one of the leaders in the industry in what we do and what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and I've used Kontech in other in-situ testing contractors, like when I lived in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So I've used Kontech, I don't know, dozens of times.
Yeah, at least.
There's two different main categories I would put those site investigations into. One is kind of a wellness check, just seeing if everything's working the way it's supposed to, and the design parameters are being met. And the other one is something is going wrong, and you need to try to figure out how to remedy the situation. And the first one is a lot more common, but there is a lot of times when the in-situ testing has been used to avoid whatever you want to call it, an unwanted event.
So it's not just mining. You know, we've had that opportunity on large infrastructure projects. I mean, what opened our office here in the Salt Lake area way back when was the rebuild of I-15 prior to the Winter Olympics coming to Salt Lake City back in 2002. But they rebuilt a large, you know, I think it was 21-mile stretch or something like that of highway. And at the time, it was the largest design build project the Federal Highway Administration had ever let out. Of course, you know, since then it's been crushed. But back then, in the late 90s, that was the biggest they had ever done. And it's really become kind of the norm, I think, for a lot of large highway projects that have done that now. And, you know, that I-15 project was one of the originals. And we were blessed enough to be involved in that. And they you know, give credit to the guys who were on that design team and the requirements for UDOT and what have you, understanding the need for CPT testing and understanding their geology and the value that it could bring. And, you know, they were essentially leapfrogging holes. For every borehole, they did a CPT hole all the way through that project.
And
I don't know how many hundreds of holes we did over the space of about 3 years.
Yeah.
That project.
Right, right. Huh. Well, Sean, is there anything else you would like to share with the listeners?
I don't know, Brian. It's kind of tough. Given your nature and background, you know, I think a lot of your listeners have been involved in the mining industry for a long time. You know, it's where you and I have worked together for over the years, and it's been great. You know, my involvement, and you know, like I said, I've been here for 22 years. You know, I hope to be here for another 22 years, maybe. But it is rewarding, and the good people we work with in the industry and the fun that we have and the projects we get involved in are great. And so I thank you for the opportunity to talk and you know, opportunity to work together for all these years.
Yeah, no, it's been my pleasure to host you and also to have you as a industry connection. And no, it's always been a very positive service that you've provided. So I'm gonna ask you another question that I'm asking all of my guests now, and that is, what do you think about space mining, whether it's the moon or the asteroids or anywhere that's not terrestrial?
Well, I think it's down the road a ways, though. Paul Main, one of the great proponents of CPT testing, will point out that. That one of the probes that they have already landed on Mars has a cone penetrometer built into it already to try and get data, you know, from subsurface investigations that they can at least push with that small probe. And so I think it's inevitable. You know, it's a tool that, like I said, it's commonplace now. It's a tool that people see valuable, and I think it'll continue to be. You know, the challenge, I think, with space mining is a lot of that is hard rock, so we'll have to figure out different ways to deal with things. But in my mind, I think it's inevitable. It's where the Elon Musks and the, you know, the SpaceX programs and the various things that have gone on are trying to capture and, you know, do the different thing. And, you know, growing up, you know, being, you know, a big fan of the various Star Wars and Star Treks and those different things, you know, it makes you think of what could come maybe one day. And, you know, some of those people who were, you know, really quite visionary, you know, the Gene Roddenberrys and the George Lucases and the different things that, you know, if nothing else, they inspired a lot of imagination. And that makes a big difference in the world.
They did. And some of the greatest minds in the world are working on the problem of space mining, because there are some very valuable materials out there. And sooner or later, there's going to be an economically viable way to bring that back to Earth.
Sure.
Or to use it from space for other activities.
Yeah, it's fun as I look, you know, now that I have a, you know, my first grandchild, and, you know, you wonder what's in store for, you know, the kids of the future, you know, what it's going to be like for them. It puts things in a lot more perspective. It makes it kind of fun and exciting.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that grandchild is going to see space mining sometime in its lifetime.
Yeah, so... And it's fun, and hopefully you and I will be involved in some aspect of that before we're gone.
That would be great. Well, Sean, I think we can sign off now, but I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day, especially, and you're probably exhausted from moving snow all day.
Well, so, my back's a little sore, but I'm doing good.
So. Oh, good. Okay, well. Until I see you next time, thanks again, Sean, and stay well.
You bet. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. Goodbye now.
Bye.
Well, that's it. I'm Brian, and this is Behind the Scenes with Brian. Until next time, keep on rockin'.